You have reached the Every Little Thing helpline. Please leave your message after the tone.
Hey, Flora. This is Gwendolyn Moore.
Gwen called us with a question about an iconic animal sound.
The roar they use in Jurassic Park sounds like no other animal that I can come up with. And I was wondering where the dinosaur roar comes from.
Hello?
Hey, Gwen.
Uh-oh.
Do you have a dog?
Yeah, he's a puppy, and he got really excited and peed on the floor, and it's been really fun 15 minutes.
Hey, Walter, hush.
What kind of dog is Walter?
He's a miniature dachshund. He's like teeny tiny.
Are you a big Jurassic Park fan?
The older like movies from the 90s and stuff like that.
What about the newer movies? Have you seen Jurassic World?
It's funny too, because the day that I called and left the message was when I saw the trailer for the first time, and then I just finally watched the movie last night.
All right, let me make sure we have our roar straight. You called about Jurassic World. Is this the roar in question?
Yes, that's it. That's the one where, like, it has that super high-pitched, almost just scream slash building falling down sound.
How do you think they make the roar sound? Do you have a hypothesis?
I don't know. That's where the question came from. But in my dream world, I think it would just be really cool to find out this was completely man-made. Maybe with some like pots and pans, like when you rattle a cookie sheet or something.
People in a studio.
Just like shaking a bunch of shit. Yeah.
No.
That is not how it works. So I want to introduce you to Al Nelson and Pete Horner.
Hit record. Here we go. We are recording.
They're sound engineers. They work for Skywalker Sound.
We've got a few microphones here at Skywalker.
Yeah, except that as we speak, Al's trying to use some scotch tape to attach his microphone.
These are the guys who made the roars in the new Jurassic movies.
Good people to go to for answers.
Absolutely. So to make the roar you called about, Al says that he and Pete followed a playbook that was written by the original sound designers of Jurassic Park.
It's a dinosaur.
There is a language that's been established in those first three films.
Those movies taught us what a roar sounds like.
Ooh, the gurgling at the end is the best.
So that original T-Rex roar was made by Alan Pete's mentor, the sound legend Gary Rydstrom. And Gary's idea was to use real animals as the basis for the roars.
Find animals making weird sounds in unique situations.
So Gary sent a sound engineer to an animal kingdom to record.
And they were trying to get elephant sounds from big elephants. And then this little baby elephant came running around the corner and went, "Ah!" and then ran away.
Wait, so you're telling me that in the T-Rex, there's a baby elephant sound?
Yeah, that's the magic ingredient.
That's the secret sauce of the T-Rex roar?
That is the secret, a little cute little baby elephant, and it only roared once.
That's awesome, though, especially that it's a baby elephant, because could you get any more opposite of a T-Rex? That'd be a snack.
So when Al and Pete set out to make the dinosaur sounds for Jurassic World, the new movies, they knew what they were looking for thanks to the baby elephant.
You're looking for personality.
Could you do this digitally?
No.
You get so much additional information in an organic source, sort of a randomness that you can't really produce out of a zero and a one.
But also, really what you want is emotion.
Yeah, I really think it's like that. It's like those actors that have a great voice, you know. There are animals that are stars.
In the same way that, you know, Robert De Niro or, you know, Meryl Streep or Christopher Walken or anybody else, when they howl or bellow or scream or speak, you know, it's with passion and purpose and emotion.
The Meryl Streep of animal noises. That's a once-in-a-lifetime sound right there.
So let's get back to the roar that you called about, Gwen. It's the Indominus Rex, like the T-Rex 2.0 in Jurassic World.
Oh, it is? It's not a Tyrannosaurus Rex anymore?
I can tell you watched the movie very closely.
What is it then? Is that bigger?
Okay, let's do a quick plot recap.
So people have been going to Jurassic World for a while. They're kind of bored. So the park decides to design a new dinosaur called the Indominus Rex. And they basically created it in a petri dish.
Oh, okay. So it's like, whatever, half frog or something?
It's a mutant.
Right. Okay.
More teeth, scarier.
Well, duh. I don't think they would, like, soften the T-Rex. Let's give him less teeth.
So what our filmmaker Colin was looking for was he was looking for this irate dinosaur that had this high-pitched wail because it's a mutant. So we started finding sounds that sounded mutated like that.
So Al and Pete went on a casting mission for their own Meryl Streliphant, looking for animals that could sell a bloodthirsty monster. And at a Disney Animal Kingdom, they found one.
It's like this cute, big-eared, scared-to-death little baby fennec fox.
Fox?
Yeah, fennec fox. Definitely look it up.
Okay, spell it.
F-E-N-N-E-C, fox.
Oh my God, the ones with the teeny faces and the big ears.
Yes.
They look like those stuffed animals that kids get with the giant eyes.
Yes. And the animal caretakers there told Al and Pete that in the right circumstances, this fox would perform.
They said, oh, this fennec fox hates it when the guy with the boots comes by. So big guy with the boots comes in and the fennec fox would do these scary screams.
It's like a little T-Rex the size of my finger.
He was like one of our baby elephants.
But there were other performances in the Indominus Roar as well. Like, Geordie really should get an honorable mention.
Geordie the howler monkey.
Al found him in an Animal Kingdom in Florida.
And it's got this long, raspy bellow, this...
The roar also has a dash of pig. And some cougar growls and tiger purrs.
When tigers purr, it's called chuffing. And it means they're happy, and they do this sort of fuff, 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 fuff. Chuff, 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 chuff.
Yes, the gurgle. That's awesome that it's a tiger.
And it's a really sweet sound. But we turned it into something scary. And so when...
Menacing.
Yeah. When the Indominus was sort of on the prowl, it would do this...
Do we get to, like, overlap them now and hear them all together?
Yep. Here is the Indominus Rex roar.
I love thinking of all of them, like the pig and the fox in a studio together.
That's how they do it. They bring them in.
No one wears boots.
Except for that one moment when they need the performance.
Cue guy with boots.
Unless you can't get all the animals' schedules to work, in which case Al and Pete can stitch the individual sounds together.
I equate it to like knitting a sweater where there's a little blue and then you do a little red and then you do a little yellow and then you do a little green.
You're looking sort of for that inflection point where, you know, the tonality is just right that you believe it going from one thing to another, put them all together and make them into something new.
Gwen, before we wrap up, I do have a message for Walter, your dog. One of his comrades was in the newest Jurassic World. This is Dachshund Rita.
I know that whine.
ELT listeners, if you have a pet with talent.
With talent.
Please record it and send it to us, and we will send it to Al and Pete.
I want somebody's crazy pet raccoon sounds.
I have a microphone. I will drive to wherever
exactly,
the animals
yeah.
are.
We'll do a cross-country tour visiting all of your listeners.
I feel sure that the next Meryl Streep of animals is part of the ELT family. Let's find her. Email us at elt@gimletmedia.com, or you can leave us voicemail at 833-RING-ELT. After the break, what did dinosaurs really look like? A little later, a lightning round of dino questions, but first, this one from ELT listener Lila.
I really gotta know what color dinosaurs were.
Hey, Lila, it's Flora.
Hey, Flora, how are you doing?
So, Lila, you had a burning dinosaur question.
Yes, I did. I really care about them. What is informing all of the images that we see of dinosaurs?
Yes. Why are dinosaurs, like excluding Barney, always pictured with lizardy skin and muted earth tones? I'm thinking Land of the Lost. I'm thinking dinosaurs.
Not the mama! Wee!
Oof. Is that look real?
Yeah. Is that based on science?
Lila, you're onto something with this question, because it turns out that even what you see in a museum is suspect.
100% of paleo art is wrong.
That's paleontologist Thomas Holtz.
The problem is we don't know where it's wrong.
And that's because most of the time all we have left of dinosaurs are their bones.
The bones of a dinosaur don't retain any of that information about the outside.
So there was a lot of guesswork about the skin, but some fossils did leave a clue about dinosaur outsides.
Because there's a handful of fossils that are found every so often where a dinosaur happened to die against, well, and the mud that it was lying on took an impression of the scales before the flesh rotted away. So we've known for over 100 years that many dinosaurs had scales.
So that's why artists incorporated scales into their drawings.
And then they had to make a choice. What do they put on the outside in terms of colors?
And so artists did the logical thing. They looked at the colors of other scaly creatures.
Yeah. Lizards.
Lizards. Reptiles. Exactly.
And so some people would do a lot of dull colored dinosaurs, grays and browns and so forth. And that's sort of the image that a lot of artists had done when I was growing up.
So that's where the faded dinosaur palette comes from. Then in the 1990s, some of the guesswork on dino outerwear goes away with the F word.
Yeah, the F word, yes. That's really overhauled our image of what dinosaurs looked like.
like forensic science?
Feathers.
Dinosaurian feathers.
In the 1990s, scientists start finding feathers on dinosaur fossils in China.
Primarily northeastern China, where there's really spectacular preservation. So it's no longer just the bones or the impression of skin, but some traces of the original organic matter that formed the outside of the creatures.
And there's variation in featheriness. Like, some dinosaurs had tufts of fluff, which paleontologists adorably call dino fuzz.
And then other ones have honest-to-goodness feathers. And in fact, every time a raptor dinosaur has been found, it is as feathered as a chicken or a turkey or a bald eagle or you name it, modern bird, it's feathered.
Do we know if all dinosaurs had them?
No, we can't say for sure what percentage of dinosaurs had feathers and fuzz, but it seemed to be widespread. And here are a few specific updates to your mental imagery. Tyrannosaurus may have been fuzzy. Velociraptor was covered in feathers. And Brontosaurus was probably fuzz and feather free.
Wow. Okay.
And these feathers do hold clues on color. By comparing fossil feathers to modern ones, we can start to get an idea of what those dino feathers looked like. Scientists say you can picture some black, some gray, and rusty red.
Whoa, red. Red's not a color I think of with dinosaurs at all. It's not in the palette.
Add it. Along with some feathers and fuzziness.
This makes me wish I had a stuffed animal that was a dinosaur.
Lila, thanks for the great question. You are not alone in your dinosaur curiosity. ELT listeners had tons of dino questions, so while we're in the Mesozoic, we thought we'd try to answer some in a lightning round dino Q&A. Here for that, we have paleontologist Jingmei O'Connor.
Hello.
Okay, first question. Jay asks, how did the non-avian dinosaurs go extinct? Was it a meteor, volcano, climate change? What is the deal?
All of the above. So this story that this meteor caused the extinction of the non-avian dinosaurs is a vast oversimplification. That was more of the straw that broke the camel's back, if you will. If you look at the fossil record, you see that a lot of major dinosaur groups were already on the decline long before the actual meteor impact. So it was climate change. It was a massive volcanism that was going on all over the world, which may have also been affecting the climate change. There is no one answer.
Another serious question from Caroline. Can we call chicken nuggets dinosaur nuggets?
Totally. So basically, all birds are dinosaurs, but not all dinosaurs are birds. So if you were eating a turkey drumstick, it's a dinosaur drumstick. But if you were eating a stegosaur drumstick, it would not be a bird drumstick.
Karen asked, how did dinosaurs get so big?
So the biggest dinosaurs are all dinosaurs that have a skeletal feature called pneumaticity, which is something that we see in living birds, but in no other reptiles. So basically, it's hollow chambers in the bone that allow the bone to be just as strong, but much lighter, which allowed them to get big.
Okay, on a different note, a listener on Facebook asked, what dinosaur would make a good pet, in your opinion?
I mean, I would love to have a pet dinosaur. I like a little ceratopsian called Psittacosaur. It's a very small dinosaur, about the size of a lap dog. It's basically like having a cooler turtle. You know, it's just going to be walking around grazing in your backyard. And it had these feather-like bristles coming off of its tail. He'd be a really cute little dinosaur pet.
I feel like you've thought about this before.
Oh, I definitely have. Oh, and my favorite dinosaur, Mononychus, I think that would make a pretty good pet also. It's this really cool dinosaur whose its four limbs have been reduced to one giant digit. So, like, I mean, it just has this one giant claw.
I feel like one giant claw is not what I want on a pet.
Yeah, you're right.
If you have a burning question that we can help you with, give us a ring. 833-RING-ELT.
Every Little Thing is produced by Kristen Clark, Phoebe Flanagan, Aaron Reese, Annette Heist, and Flora Lichtman, with help from Nicole Pasulka and Doug Barron. Ian Chillug and Caitlin Kenny are our consulting editors. Dara Hirsch scored and mixed this episode. I am covered in fuzz. Goodbye. Thank you.